Okay, good evening. Welcome to the Wednesday, August 7th, 2024 meeting of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. We have a roll call, please.
Director Karen Wright.
I'm here.
Chair Linda Austin.
Here.
Vice Chair Jeremy Russell.
Here.
Okay, if you'll all please join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Thank you. Agenda review, is there anything anyone wants to? Everybody good with the agenda, so we'll accept the agenda as presented. Now we'll do public comment for items that are not on the agenda. Is there any public comment? Seeing none. We'll close public comment and move to the consent agenda, the warrants, minute meetings of June 5th, and the request for plant light replacement. Is there any report on that? Any? Nothing?
Consent, yeah.
Yeah.
No report.
Okay. Any questions?
Nope.
You gonna make a motion?
No, ma'am. Oh, I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda.
But first, I'll open for public comment, seeing that there's no one in the public. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I make a motion that we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All right.
Director Karen Wright?
Yes.
Director Linda Austin?
Yes.
Director Jeremy Russell?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All righty, thank you. That brings us to item six. 6A, wastewater treatment plant redundancy project update.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. The item before you is our quarterly updates on the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project that we've been doing since we began construction. This evening, Ms. Eileen Shields with MKN is with us to provide the update, and I'll turn it over to her. Thanks, Eileen.
Thank you. Is this on? Yeah. Okay.
Should be red.
I can't quite.
No.
Up, right up under the.
Oh.
It's on.
It's on?
It is on. Okay.
You just gotta talk into it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gent. Eileen Shields, project manager with Michael Kane and Lane Associates. So I want to start the discussion with just reminding the board that at the June 5th, 2024 board meeting, your board approved an increase in the project budget. The revised budget allows for the rehabilitation and coverage of costs for the damage to the secondary clarifier 2. This is needed to complete the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project. And these costs are being tracked separately from the overall project. And there's still no indication that the district will be responsible for those additional costs, but we are reflecting it here in the budget. Table 1 is a summary of that budget, so it has the columns broken out between the total project budget, the wastewater redundancy project, what I'm calling the main project, so that's everything besides the cost for the damage and rehabilitation of secondary clarifier 2. So the overall total project budget is $44.5 million, with about $9 million of that for the SC2 damage and rehabilitation project. So this quarterly project update covers the months February through May of 2024, except in a couple spots where I've noted that variance. Table 2 has a summary of the schedule, and currently we're anticipating, or the schedule shows a completion date of December 31st, 2024. That was based on the contractor's April 1st, 2024 budget, or sorry, schedule update. Now that the secondary clarifier 2 micropile installation has begun and that's underway, we're a lot further into it, we anticipate that their submitted June schedule will show a more accurate schedule completion. So currently, through discussions with the contractor, district staff, the construction manager, we're anticipating the secondary two clarifier work will be done by the mid to end of December of 2024. And once that's brought online, the contractor will be able to do startup and commissioning of the full redundancy project processes. So the aeration basins and the secondary clarifier two will be able to work together, and they'll seed the basin and get the biology growing and show that it's doing what it should be doing. So that process is expected to take about 45 days. And so project completion is anticipated somewhere in February. The reason I didn't go into all of that in this report is because it's the quarterly update through May of 2024, and that has to do with how we get invoices and costs and showing all the budget summary and all that. So the next part of the report is the budget summary. This was drafted on July 25th, so this is, you know, based on current understanding of the budget, the approved contract changes, and costs received to date, so invoices and approved change orders. So I did also include a change order 27, which was approved in June, not through May. But I wanted to show current approved contract. So right now, the current construction contract is about $31.8 million. Contract earnings to date is just over $29 million. So they're about 91% complete based on their current approved contract. So there's summaries of those change orders. I wasn't going to go through all of it, but if you have specific questions, I'm happy to address any of that. Moving on to the next table, table four is the overall project budget status. This is a little different than what's been presented in the quarterly updates previously. So I'll walk through it. The first three rows are the construction bid and the approved change orders. So that subtotal, that first, that third line and the first one in bold, just adds the bid price and the approved change orders. So we've got a current contract for construction of $31.8 million. We're about $29 million spent. The construction contingency is a little bit larger than what we had before. That's based on anticipated costs for secondary clarifier 2 plus the contingency that was shown in the, I believe it's table 1, the approved budget. Other costs, other construction costs, those haven't changed. Those are the PG&E costs, the OCSD costs for the fire water line, et cetera, about $182,000. So that subtotal is your current construction costs plus contingency and other construction costs. Moving on down, professional services and the professional services contingency. The contingency is higher based on anticipated costs for SC2, primarily the increased schedule for construction. That adds a total of about $8.6 million. So we have a total project budget of about $44.5 million. These last three rows have been discussed previously with board, but they haven't been presented in this report before. So this first one, estimated claim for SC2 related costs, that's based on the estimated project budget in table one, and it includes the contingency. So I think that's an important note, because that contingency is there just in case, and it might not be spent, it might be spent. It's our best estimate of something that felt appropriate for a budgetary cost at this stage in the construction. So actual claim and reimbursement won't include contingency unless it's spent, of course, on SC2 related costs. And therefore, it might vary due to those actual costs and pending negotiations. The retention for liquidated damages, $525,000. This amount was held due to liquidated damages at $3,500 per day. It's based on the contract with the construction contractor. and that's for the period between July 18th, 2023 and December 15th, 2023. That was when Primary Clarifier 1 was brought online, and it was determined by the project team that at that point, SC2 really became the critical path for construction, which is not estimated to be the contractor's fault. So this last line, the total estimated district cost, that is the total estimated project budget minus the estimated claim for SC2 related costs and minus the retention held. So we're coming in at just under $35 million as the estimated cost for the district for redundancy project overall. So any questions on that? I can keep going, but it was a little
go ahead.
Long.
Go ahead. I do too.
You go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Thank you. The 91% completion, does that include the work that's going to have to be done through February 25th and that $9 million figure?
No, this is a status of the invoices received to date from the contractor.
Okay,
very good. Against their current approved contract. So,
understand. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was it for me. Thank you.
For me, it's about the overall project budget status. And the way you explained it, I think I have this. I just want to make sure I've got this right.
Okay.
So I got a little lost when you said on under the total, so in the third from the bottom line, estimated claim for SC2 related cost, you said that does include contingencies. So my alarm bells went off when you said, well, if we don't use the contingency, that number is going to get smaller, which means the total estimated district cost is going to get bigger. But that would be offset by the construction contingency, that line that's under the subtotal, right? So that would balance out and still end us at 34,960?
Correct.
Okay, got it. Thank you. And just briefly, Jeremy, can you remind me, excuse me, Mr. Gent, can you remind me what the working cost was when we got started? In my head, it was 27.
Yeah, and I think we can look back to table one. And so our original was $27,655,000, I believe. That's the bid price, right?
Yeah, that's the bid price.
Plus the original contingency that we had would be the project budget.
But that wasn't including professional costs,
professional
right?
services
so what was
too,
the
yeah.
total that we thought it was going to be? Was that 35?
It was in the low 30s. I'm looking at so many numbers close to 35. I don't want to state it on the record, but it was in the low 30s.
I guess I'm really asking how far over budget are we going to be? And once we subtract out the claim.
Once, I believe we can say once, if we're successful at making the full claim, we will complete the project under budget.
Because we didn't touch the full contingency.
We didn't eat a lot of the contingency on change orders that weren't associated with the SC2 failure. So we will be overall under budget by a couple million dollars.
Okay.
I don't have the accounting in front of me, but
I just wanted to make sure my head was in the right place on all that. So it sounds like it is. Thank you very much. Thank you for letting me interrupt you.
Absolutely. Yes, I agree that's my record. I don't have the number at my fingertips, but it is in the June meeting packet.
And I don't need follow-up on that.
Okay.
I just wanted to have the basic numbers in my head.
Yeah. I want to say it was around 35 overall, so we should be coming in 35.7 maybe, something like that.
Yeah.
We should be coming in with contingency left over, so long as there's not any more unanticipated issues that come
that
up.
That podium's made of wood.
I know.
And I will say, it seems like the construction is covered, and if we're talking about potential cost overruns or any on the contingency, we do have the 45-day startup period. And so when we're really turning on that equipment during the 45-day startup period, we may identify other changes.
Okay.
So I would say there's almost certainty that we'll identify a few thousand dollars worth of work to just dial it in. I think it's unlikely that we see anything significant, but we still have to make sure when we flip the switch and try to turn everything on that it does come on and run. So there's a chance that we might identify something, to Ms. Shields' point, that in the future we may use some of that contingency, but there's no evidence that it would be a substantial draw.
Thank you.
As far as the summary of work, it was primarily concentration on doing the demolition and work to prepare for the micropile installation at SC2, and then some minor like punch list items around the site that Filon still needs to complete or was completing, painting, you know, this type of stuff to just complete everything out. Let's see. And Keller, the specialty subcontractor for the micropiles, mobilized in May and started that micropile installation. So upcoming work, they're going to continue that micropile installation through, I believe, the end of the month. And then Filance will be able to get in there and start the repair and rebuild of that floor slab for the secondary clarifier. Attachments include construction photos. There's some neat ones of that secondary clarifier that kind of show them getting ready and coring holes for the micropiles. And then I believe some demolition photos through April, and some rebar work. And then the last few photos show some of the crane work and the little drill rig that they actually took a crane to drop into the clarifier to do those micropiles. So it's been interesting work out there. And then M&S's executive summaries are attached for February through May. Those are executive summaries for a monthly construction manager's report that we include every time. And there's a much more detailed budget status summary that shows all the line items if you wanted to get into that level. And that completes my report.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
No more. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Shields. Okay, is there any public comment on this? There's no public here. So we will move on to item 6B, contract amendment 2 for wastewater treatment redundancy project administration services with MKN and Associates.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. So the item before you is similar to other contract extensions that we've had to continue to keep moving forward with the redundancy project. And the one before you is for MKN and Associates for in the amount of, well, that I'll start with saying contract amendment 2 for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project administration services with MKN and Associates is the item before you. And it's recommended that you authorize the district administrator to execute a contract amendment for continued wastewater treatment plant redundancy project administration services with MKN in the amount of $82,674 for a total contract budget of $342,629. And that represents the engineering effort from MKN since the beginning of the redundancy project. And we've been using them as district engineer staff to keep the project organized and moving forward. And so this extension will reach the February date that was referenced in the previous staff report, where we will be done with the 45-day commissioning. And this will allow MKN to continue to provide services to the district as we move through construction and the claim process with Kennedy Jenks. And so we're recommending this approval. And I'm happy to answer any questions the board might have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gent. Any questions from the board?
No questions.
No, thank you.
Then I have no questions. Any public comment? There's no public.
Madam Chair, I'll move that we authorize the district administrator to execute a contract amendment for continued wastewater treatment plant redundancy project administration services of MKN and Associates in the amount of $82,674 for a total contract budget of $342,629.
I'll second that.
All right. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Karen Wright?
Yes.
Director Lawson?
Yes.
Director Henry Weston?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Moving on to 6C, the 2024 amendment to the district's conflict of interest code.
So, good evening, Jeremy Gent, district administrator. The item before you is an amendment to the district's conflict of interest code. This was, Amy, was this you or Keith that identified this need? Yeah, so the staff realized that we needed to make a review, and so largely we worked with legal counsel to complete this review, and with Keith not being here, I'm doing the staff report this evening. But so we're asking to adopt the resolution number 2024-452, amending the district's conflict of interest code to omit the position district engineer as part of the district's biennial review. So every other year we're supposed to review our conflict of interest code, and during Keith's review, it references a district engineer as being a staff type position in the code, and we did some back and forth, like, is there anybody that's officially serving in that capacity, and lacking any official district engineer, it was deemed inappropriate to have that language in the conflict of interest code. So that's the only change that was identified in the review, and so we're moving forward recommending that be omitted, and we'll adopt it and do our next biennial review in 2026. Happy to answer any questions you might have.
All right, thank you very much. Are there any questions?
No, yes,
questions.
Please. Just as a matter of interest, so say that we hire a district engineer. It's not going to be difficult, I take it, to revise this code of conflict of interest code, should that be necessary?
Correct. If we reached a point where we decided that it made sense to have a district engineer on staff, we would just revise the code. We could have we wouldn't even have to wait two years. We can revise our conflict of interest code at any time.
Okay.
if we make that type of change. Now, just forecasting, we don't have a district engineer now, and we delivered one of the largest projects that we've ever undertaken without a district engineer on staff. So I don't see in the immediate future like that potential coming back that we would say we want to staff. It's expensive to staff an engineer. You know, we can hire outside engineers under contract, and you can see that even going through redundancy, having a staff level engineer that's done a lot of work, it's averaging $80,000 a year, and we couldn't staff a full-time engineer for anywhere near that. That being, we also, using a consultant, we have access to a variety of expertises that you can never really achieve with a single individual.
Sure.
So they can parse that out to somebody that maybe has knowledge about operations or somebody that has knowledge about planning. So there's all those things to consider, whether you contract for district engineering. And so I am an engineer, and so the real small stuff gets handled and doesn't go out, and so we're not getting beat up on the small charges, and that's why I think it really works to maintain these contract type services in this particular case. If there was changeover and the new administrator was an accountant or had a business background and a non-engineer or something like that, you might want to bring in a district engineer, because there is a lot of engineering oversight that's necessary for mm-hmm. a district like that. So that's just my thoughts on the whole district engineer concept moving forward.
I understand.
Yeah.
Thank you. It makes sense.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. There's no public comment, so.
Madam Chair, I'll move that we adopt resolution 2024-452, amending the district's conflict of interest code to omit the position of district engineer.
And I will second that.
Okay.
Director Bright?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Rebessa?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All righty, thank you. And now that takes us to our district administrator and plant operations report. So is this Michael?
I'll go. I have just a real short one, and then I'll turn it over to Michael. So on the administrator's report, the redundancy project was the full update was given tonight. We also have been working to move our cogeneration project forward. That's the project that repurposes, puts to beneficial reuse our methane gas and generates power with it, largely enough power to offset the plant's usage, or the bulk of the plant's usage. And so we added another design meeting on the first, and the project design continues. Some miscellaneous items, SEIU and the district continue negotiations. We continue to meet to discuss the amended MOU. OCSD manager Peter Brown has requested a presentation be made regarding the redundancy project and the coastal conditions, tentatively October 9th. And so he reached out to the district. There was some questions regarding some of the conditions in our coastal permit for the redundancy project that and some interpretations imply a relocation, and so there's some confusion around that. I think OCSD manager Peter Brown reviewed the permit on his own and came to the same conclusion that there's concern that there's language that is saying that we have to move the plant by 2047, but that's not the case. We've met with Coastal. That's not the language that's in there. But there's a contingency, or a contingent of people that are interested in redeveloping the airport and the wastewater treatment plant. And so they're curious, like, should this thing move sooner and free up that land? And so that gets talked about a lot. And so I'm happy to go provide that update to OCSD to explain, since there's been kind of this vacuum and this information was being pushed out without any district oversight on that information. It was kind of one-sided. So I really just want to put the public and the OCSD board mind at ease. These things are being handled. We're doing exactly what we're required to do by Coastal Commission. We're going to meet all of our goals, everything that's set forth in our coastal development permit. If we can't meet a timeline, there's a provision in there for asking for extension. We've done that twice. We've asked for 6-month extensions on certain deliverables when the project was delayed years ago. Back in 2021, we had to deliver a plan, and we needed 6 more months because we weren't that far along. And so Coastal has been fine to work with. And so I'm rambling a little bit because I just wanted your board to know that, having watched some of the meetings, there's concern that there's a little bit of a spin that some stuff's not being handled at the district. And so I offered to come over and explain that the district and the staff is being well ran, and that there are no issues with the coastal development permit, contrary to what some people may have implied. So that'll be October 9th, unless we have to move it for some unforeseen reason. No plant tours. Tentative item, fiscal year audit. We're still waiting on our auditor, Moss Levy Hartson. They reached out to us. They actually had the lead auditor had a family issue, and that's been resolved. I just got an email since you left, Amy, that they anticipate having it next week for us. So it's a couple months late at this point from when we expected to get it from them. There's no contract obligation for when it's needed, but it does matter to us more than just administratively, because we have the bonds for the redundancy project. And so S&P and the bondholders, they want to see our audits every year, and so they request them, and so they're asking for them, and we don't have it. But and Moss Levy has interjected and responded to them and said, it's our fault, but it's coming. So that's handled, and there's no action necessary on that. And that concludes my administrator's report, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Jones, unless there's any questions.
I have a question. Yeah. Why are we behind? I realize that it's on them, but in terms of the audit, why are we behind on that? I mean, when I first came here, we were 3 years behind, and we finally got. I don't like seeing we're going back the other direction.
Correct. So they came in and performed the audit on schedule. And so they came into the office, reviewed all our files. They sat down with us, said no immediate findings. And so then they go back and they prepare the official document. And so that's where it's stalled at this point.
I guess I'm asking why is it stalled?
So the lead auditor's father-in-law died unexpectedly.
Oh, so personal issues.
So that's the personal, yeah. So it was a personal issue. He was out of the office for an extended amount of time and wasn't able to complete the audit. And you can only use the lead auditor has to be the lead auditor. It would be hard to change someone out. And so it really had to be him to keep the financial integrity of the whole thing intact for him to review all the documents.
That's understandable. So, thank you for clarifying that. I really appreciate
you're welcome.
That.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm ready for you, Mr. Jones.
All right. Good evening, ladies of the board. Michael Jones, plant superintendent. The item before you is the plant operations report for the reporting period of June 1st through July 31st. During this reporting period, there were three exceedances of the district's National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit. A full description of each exceedance is provided further in the report. All other process values were within permit limitations. Monthly plant data for June was all within permit limitations as shown in the table. And then monthly plant data for July 2024, I've highlighted the 9,200 of fecal coliform to signify the exceedance that occurred. We did have two others that I'll go over further in the report. Operations staff completed multiple operations and maintenance tasks and work orders. Moving on to some training, operations staff performed demonstration of capabilities in the district's laboratory. We had operators in training attended the California Water Environmental Association Tri-Counties Workshop and Training Seminar at the Los Osos Water Recycling Facility. And staff performed a monthly online computerized trainings on personal protective equipment, respiratory protection, and workplace stress. And all staff participated in spill prevention, control, and countermeasures training. Call-outs, we did have one call-out this reporting period that occurred on Tuesday, July 16th at approximately 7:07 p.m. We had a power outage. Operations staff responded and ensured the plant was operating normally under generator power. Once power was restored at approximately 8:45, operations staff then again verified the plant was back in normal operation. Moving on to our exceedances, our first exceedance was on July 12th, 2024. We exceeded the maximum total chlorine residual. We recorded a total residual chlorine of 1.99 milligrams per liter. The cause of this exceedance was due to a breakdown in communication, which ultimately led to the failure to perform resampling and analysis of total residual chlorine to ensure the district was within permit limitations. Additionally, the district is currently operating at a higher chlorine dosage. The district typically operates at higher dosages to account for heavier loadings to the wastewater treatment facility during the peak summer months or tourist season. Total residual chlorine analysis performed following the violation on July 13th and July 14th were within normal range, non-detects, and were within permit limitations. In order to prevent reoccurrence, the district has provided remedial training to laboratory and operations staff to ensure that resampling and analysis occurs immediately following any potential non-compliance with any district permit limitation and that the chief plant operator is notified immediately. Our second exceedance occurred on July 19th for daily maximum fecal coliform bacteria. District laboratory staff recorded a fecal coliform result of 9,200 MPN per 100 milliliters for July 18th. Immediately following the observation, operations staff raised the chlorine dosage at our chlorine contact tank. Our third exceedance occurred on July 1st and was also for daily maximum fecal coliform bacteria. District laboratory staff recorded a fecal coliform result of 5,400 MPN per 100 milliliters for July 31st. Immediately following this observation on August 1st, operations staff raised the chlorine dosage again at the chlorine contact tank, verified the disinfection probe calibrations, and district laboratory staff collected additional samples to run multiple fecal coliform analysis. All results of additional fecal coliform analysis were well within permit limitations. District operations and laboratory staff are currently investigating the cause of the fecal coliform exceedances and have not yet been able to pinpoint the potential cause. There have been no operational changes or abnormalities observed. Additionally, all total residual chlorine analysis prior to dechlorination have been at an elevated level since initially raising the dosage on July 1st. There have been no abnormal upward trends in fecal coliform or total coliform analysis the days and weeks leading up to either of the exceedances. To help prevent reoccurrence, district operations staff will continue to operate the disinfection process at an additionally elevated level for the foreseeable future and continue to monitor processes for any changes. All three exceedances, we have notified the State Water Resources Control Board. The daily maximum total chlorine residual exceedance that occurred on July 12th is considered a serious violation and therefore constitutes a mandatory minimum penalty of $3,000 be assessed to the district. Both daily maximum fecal coliform exceedances that occurred on July 18th and July 31st are considered a non-serious violation and therefore will not constitute a mandatory minimum penalty be assessed to the district. Non-serious, also known as chronic, violations are subject to a mandatory minimum penalty of $3,000 each when four or more occur in any period of 6 consecutive months, period commencing on the date that one of the violations occurs and ending 180 days after that date. The first three violations in that period are not assessed a mandatory minimum penalty. For the July 12th exceedance, that's due to expire on January 8th. The July 18th exceedance is due to expire on January 14th, and the July 31st exceedance is due to expire on January 27th. Just kind of some more background on the exceedances. It's really frustrating to, you know, have to come to your board without having to an answer or have been able to pinpoint the cause. Our operation, all of our numbers have shown that our plant's been operating well. It's just these abnormal spikes in fecal coliform. The chlorine residual exceedance, I think, with the remedial training that we've provided, I don't think will occur again. Again, it was just a poor judgment, and we'll learn from that and get better from that. But these other exceedances, it's just really hard without being able to pinpoint the cause. And I just want to reassure you that we're exhausting all avenues trying to pinpoint and look and figure out what the cause of that exceedance is. Moving on to some better news, some projects that we completed in during this reporting period. We completed the chemical pump installation project. That project was completed on July 24th, 2024. On July 25th, district operations staff completed the installation, testing, and commissioning of the chemical pump installation project. This project consisted of relocating the existing chemical pump skid outside of the chemical shed for temporary setup to maintain continued operation of the disinfection system, demolition of existing chemical shed, installation of new chemical shed, installation of new pumping skids, chemical lines, electrical, lighting, integration into SCADA, testing, field service, and commissioning. Enviro assisted district operations staff with electrical work and SCADA integration, and the chemical pump skid manufacturer, Let's Jesco, assisted with providing the field service. The rest of this project was completed in its entirety by district operations staff. And I've included some photos of the project in the plant operations report. District operator Justin Music was the project lead, and with assistance from district operations staff, was able to complete this project in 2 months. The district's chemical pumps had reached the end of their operational life and needed to be replaced. The installation of the new chemical pumps will aid district operations staff by allowing more control to minimize overall chemical usage, receive live chemical flow data to better calculate usage and record operational trends, integration into SCADA to allow for additional monitoring and alarms, and redundant chemical pumps to allow for shutdown to perform maintenance and servicing or backup in the event of a failure. Another project that we completed this this reporting period was our sludge bed wall project. That was completed on July 31st. The district's contractor, J&E Concrete, completed the sludge bed wall project. This project consisted of the continuation of the back wall of the district's sludge beds. The district initiated this project in 2020, but put the project on hold to allow the redundancy project contractor to use the sludge beds for laydown of equipment. Once the sludge beds were no longer needed by the redundancy project contractor, operations staff solicited proposals, entered into an agreement with J&E Concrete, and work began on the sludge bed wall project on July 22nd. Moving on to some staff photos. In this first photo, we have operators in training Nick Kurakawa and Robert Grajeda transferring residual polymer to a tote for disposal. In the next photo, we have operators Justin Music and Billy Romhild fabricating stands for the district's new chemical pump skids. In this photo, we have operations staff working on bollard installation to protect the new emergency generator from vehicle impacts. And in this photo, it's operations staff working on the installation of a replacement mixing pump motor. And then in this photo, it's almost all of the district staff in one photo. And I just want to say we love serving our community. And with that, that concludes my report, and I'm able to answer any questions the board may have.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
So, Michael, I get your frustration. Like, I do my job right, and I still got a B+. Like, I still lost points. Like, why is that? So my question is, considering that if and when it happens again, and we have no idea why it's happening, it's going to cost us $3,000, would it be a better use or a wise use of money to maybe bring us another set of eyes in that's not part of our system to kind of see if they can, somebody else can pinpoint that before we spend $3,000 and then do that anyway?
Yes, it would be. We have reached out to Rust Automation. They're the manufacturer provider of our chemical control system. They were actually on site today. And there's a potential, I think, in September, I guess the main Indris Hauser engineer will be coming out in September, I want to say like 18th or 19th, to kind of give us a little bit of background on our system to see if maybe it's, you know, it could be potentially our chemical probes. Another kind of path we're going down is the potential for interferences with sampling. Right, currently we sample as wastewater flows over the weir, and there's a potential if we're collecting a sample and we rub the weir, just because over time growth forms on the weir. If you rub the weir, there could be an interference there. You know, not necessarily a representation of our effluent. Through kind of initial investigation, we haven't seen anything there. But to your question, we are.
That's what we're doing.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
No, very thorough. Thank you.
Isn't this usually just in the summer, like in July?
Yes, July.
That's gotta have something to do.
The July months.
That's a great point. This is something that I bring up to Michael. The July pattern. This is my sixth July working at the district, and five of the six we had, And we really haven't. I mean, we've had a couple other fecal exceedances outside of the month of July, and there is some correlation. Some of that the tourist load that comes to our community on the coast is meaningful. Not only in the hotels and the rentals, but also the RV parks and the RV dump stations that we receive this stuff from. And so we've definitely communicated with state parks, and there's another outfit that goes out on the beach and pumps out a waste called Yo Banana Boys. It's kind of a weird name, so I just wanted to explain. They take trucks out onto the dunes and will empty people's septic tanks, and so they're a permitted industrial user, and so they're disposing of that waste, and we track and monitor it and get test results. But some of it might just be on these busy weekends, we get big loads coming through, and when they make it through the plant, we're asking a lot of our disinfection system. You can see in Michael's report, we have one violation for using too much disinfection chemical, and then another violation for not having disinfection, not achieving disinfection. So, and that's why you're allowed three strikes, right? Because they realize this is a living organism, and you don't always have it completely dialed in. And so Michael has reached out, and that it's him mentioning his frustration is he's been working on this for a number of years, and Last year was the only July that we didn't have an exceedance, and we thought with the modifications we had done to the disinfection system, we were getting somewhere, but here in this month, we just repeated it. So we're going to continue to investigate it, and I think we'll achieve results after we really get into it.
Well, we have every faith that you will.
Thank you.
All right. Does that bring us to our... closed session?
Any board member communications?
Board member communications, anything before we go to closed session?
I have a question. On that OCSD thing, would it be an issue? I would like to come listen to that. I actually more just want to listen to the public. I just want to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah.
But do I have any Brown Act issues if I show up to that?
No, if you just sit out.
I'll defer to Ms. Stockton, but it's not apparent to me that your attendance at an OCSD public meeting would be a... I'll defer the answer to that. Yeah.
Presumably, I mean, with the caveat, I would sit in the back and not say a word.
Just like any member of the public, you have a right to attend a meeting as a member of the public. Mr. Varney comes and attends these meetings sometimes and makes public comment. It's similar to that, except I guess you weren't going to say anything.
Okay, yeah. Great. Thank you.
Could she make public comment? Okay. I guess we're ready to adjourn to closed session. Somebody want to announce that, or do we announce?
The board will adjourn to closed session for a conference with labor negotiators, agency designated representatives, Jeremy Gent, employee organization, SEIU.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll now adjourn.